Do you hear Mickey Mouse in the background?
No, I don't think so.
In tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Hello and welcome to In Tech We Trust podcast, episode 83. We've got split brain syndrome today. We've got Lauren and Rick on the phone. How you doing, Lauren?
I'm doing well, Rick. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, it's kind of funny. Every time that I'm like legit available to make the podcast, then Gabe's like, you know, working the booth and Mark's had enough and Nigel's got something with the kids. But nonetheless, we've got an interesting trick here. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. You're at OpenStack Summit in Austin. Is that right?
I am, but I don't have to be a booth babe like Gabe, you know? I don't have the great hair that he has, so.
Have you seen his watch? His watch! I'm telling you, that's the trick. You got to get that watch. And
that gigantic, yeah.
I like that. A booth babe like Gabe. That rhymes, friends. We are big time when we start dropping rhymes like that.
That's right. I'm sure he'll appreciate it.
So what we're going to try to do in this episode is Lauren and I are going to do a quick hit of some news. So before we get into the quick hit of the news and such, Lauren, what's your vibe from this event?
You know, I like OpenStack a lot because it's a little different than the other events I go to, which are, you know, purely infrastructure, basically. So OpenStack's a little different for me, which is exciting. But, you know, now that it's gone from, you know, 500 people to 7,000 people, which is still fairly small, but, you know, the big vendors have started rolling in and it's become a lot of marketing and, you know, they got to pay for it somehow. And I don't begrudge them that, but it is, it's a fair bit of marketing. And I've heard other people with the same issue, I guess. But luckily, you know, we still have V Brownbag there and a lot of technical content around that. So that's helping a lot, I think, too.
Oh, so is the criticism more along the death of the raw, you know, because the branding and the big brands are moving in? Is that kind of this perception?
Well, not it's the sessions, really, I think, that people are a little disappointed with. And I've only been to a couple myself, but I have heard it around from various people that they're a little disappointed with how much marketing is going on within the sessions themselves.
You know, to be honest, you got to look at this OpenStack movement, and I think one of the reasons why that the marketing, and in particular the messaging, is going to come in is because I bet we have a lot more decision makers at this event this time, and I really
exactly
I bet that's why. So, good and the bad.
The suits have rolled in.
The suits. Watch out for the suits. So, that's interesting. It's a growing pain. You know, an event, an ecosystem, an industry, an individual brand, they all have growing pains, and this seems to be one of them here.
And to be totally fair, too, they do have a design session going on, too, or design track, really, which started, I think, today, maybe, or tomorrow. I don't know exactly because my badge doesn't cover that. But so that's really cool still, too, that they do have an architecture and design track for the people that do want to get more technical. So I don't want to completely badmouth it.
Well, that's the thing. You know, you look at all these industry events, they have to have something for everybody, whereas they're, you know, the roots, the grassroots of any event, VMware, like you and I kind of met in the ecosystem, as it were,
mm-hmm.
You know, it started with the hands-on people only, and then it, you know, broadens out to partners and sales strategy and CIOs and all that other jazz.
Yeah, that's the way it's got to go, I think, you know, money talks.
True dat. It's usually a .com, not a .org type of situation going on.
Right.
So the next part of the podcast I'd like to jump into is kind of a quick hit of some news, right? So from last week's episode to now, I mean, we're all kind of scattered. And like I said, this is a split brain episode. One of the first things that caught my interest this week, and you caught another element of it, some shakeups going on at vCloud Air. In particular, for those of you who don't know, that's VMware's hyperpublic cloud service. And there's two pieces of news of sorts. One is a legit mainstream out of Fortune, and another is a blog that follow a guy, Anthony Spiteri. But a couple of things going on. First is Bill Fathers, who is basically VP for vCloud Air, is leaving the company, according to several sources in the Forbes article. This is one of those things that usually doesn't bode well when leadership leaves. And I'll be honest with you, I'm watching the hyperpublic cloud space, and I see a lot of innovation coming in Azure and other hybrid or hyperpublic clouds. But myself, I don't see too much new stuff coming out of vCloud Air. And then the other piece of news is a kind of unclear message sent to customers in Japan about that region not being able to deploy new workloads, which is not very cloudy, in my opinion. So, kind of with those pieces of info, Lauren, do you have any opinions or thoughts on that?
It didn't come as a huge surprise to me. I think they've already kind of made their announcements when they started partnering with IBM and SoftLayer and AWS, I believe. And they said that they weren't really going to make many new advancements with vCloud Air, and they'd keep it running for current customers, but not really go too far with it. And it's just a hard market to compete with, I think. I think you're right. Azure's done some amazing things. It's really, really rising up. Google, AWS, the ones we're always talking about. We can't go an episode without talking about Google Cloud, right? But yeah. It didn't come as a huge surprise to me. Was it a surprise to you?
The only surprise is that I haven't seen too many new services coming from it, and that is the part that I was concerned about. But this particular, the leadership change and then the market change, those are the types of things that makes me think a little bit. But I wouldn't say I'm surprised, but I don't think necessarily it's the end, because there are some core services like hybrid infrastructure, DR to a cloud. I think VMware has a really good story there. So by no means is vCloud Air down for the count, but I do think it's going to be a little bit more focused.
I always thought the DR to the cloud was the best offering they had, honestly, with vCloud Air, because it's a little more affordable. They offer separate services around that, and I always really liked the DR to the cloud personally. When I was a partner, I thought that was a great initiative, especially if you're an all vSphere shop,
Yep, I think that, this is definitely something to watch, so stay tuned. All right, the next thing we're going to go into, and again, this is kind of quick hit. We can do that with two people, right? We don't have the Gabe narrative. We don't have the objectionary comment from Mark and then the insightful feedback from Nigel. But the next thing I'll latch on to, Samsung's little black box will hotwire your car to the internet. Interesting. So think of a coupler of not quite a smart car, but it's putting your car on the internet. Samsung's a name that we haven't heard in the smart car space, but it's definitely something you think of in the mobile device space, tablets, phones, etc. But
well,
exactly. What do you think of this notion of a connected car? Data points, maybe probably something where you don't have Android Auto and the like built in. Knee-jerk reaction, what do you think of something like that?
I think it's cool. I think it's probably something we have to look forward to being more and more common, probably, I would imagine. Use case-wise, I'm trying to think of, there's probably a million different use cases you could get here. But then again, I'm also thinking of hacking and how that's going to affect the Samsung car as well. As cars become more computerized and digitized and all of those buzzwords, it'll be interesting to see how the evil geniuses handle it.
Absolutely. I mean, where I think that this car box, this black box for your car, would not do good is for some things that I really want. Like the insurance companies are going to like it. You get a little bit more data point from the car. But one thing it's not going to do, for example, is update the firmware that controls my car software. I mean, believe it or not, a modern car has a firmware, much like a BIOS, believe it or not. Everything from transmission timing to the way signals are interpreted on devices. The cars are very sophisticated today, and there's basically a ROM. I've seen them take it out of a car, update it, and put it back in.
I just had mine upgraded, actually.
Exactly, and wouldn't it be cool if... I'd love for this type of logic to come in and, okay, download a firmware update, much like Windows update. Oh, maybe not. I don't know. We'll see.
More like a Google Chrome update, maybe?
Yeah, that might be a better analogy.
for my delivery services, when I order food at 2 a.m. or something, that way, the tracking's always a little off. So maybe this will help with my tracking and knowing exactly when that food's going to get there.
2 a.m.? Really?
Well, you know.
Hey, now. Awesome. Okay, the next quick hit piece of news I'd like to hit is this notion of ethical ad blocking, right? And there have been some challenges of blocking ads on the internet with network techniques and such and browser techniques, that's a violation of free speech. Ooh, deep. I'll be honest with you. I'm talking to you on this podcast right now, Lauren, and I'm running through an Untangle virtual appliance, and I've got adware blockers, fish blockers, content filter. I got all that good stuff going on because I got kids on this internet, right?
Right.
But this fundamental thought, and there are plenty of times that I go to an ad, a banner ad that does not display. There are plenty of websites I go to that the banner ads are blocked, but plenty that they still come through, and they would only be blocked for a reason, right? And on my network, it's blocked because Untangle says they're no good. They're on some not white list or whatever it is. Do I think it's a freedom of speech violation? I say absolutely not. I think it's a selective communication thing. If anything, the people that are challenging that it's free speech violations, I mean, I'm going at it from safety. There are some people that go all out, no ads. Okay, that's fine. But I don't think it's a freedom of speech issue. And that, by the way, is generally only a United States thing. That doesn't translate globally so much. What are your thoughts on this notion of, blocking ads being a speech issue, integrity of the internet issue type of thing?
Well, my first thought is comparing it to email. And why is it not a violation of free speech to, block or send to junk, your spam email? And why do we have laws, the canned spam or whatever that law is about, having an unsubscribe utility or button freely, openly available in the email? Why isn't that part of some sort of advertisement on the internet? I mean, I understand that you're getting maybe content for free or something like that. But to me, it kind of equates to email. And quite frankly, especially for safety or maybe just inappropriate nature when your kids are on the internet or something like that, I think that you should be able to block it. It's coming into your house, right?
Yeah, or even in the workplace. If I maintain a policy in my workplace that, people are allowed internet access, but I want them to focus on what they're doing on the internet. Banner ads are an incredible way to get distracted for this, a certain type of web surfer. So, on that angle, I could make the case. But even on a conversational level, how is that different than me walking down the street with my headphones on, which is one way of telling you I don't want to talk to you, okay? And I'm not going to hear what's going on because I don't want to hear it, right? So it that's even yet another. Are we going to take a law and say that you can't wear headphones walking down the street because you need to hear, the hecklers or the homeless or whatever is being sold from whatever storefront or something like that? So long of the short, I am pro ad block, content filtering. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I would agree. And everyone forgets, of course you can have freedom of speech, but no one has to listen.
There you go. Very good twist. The next quick hit I'd like to go into comes from Apple, of all things. We're going to jump sideways a bit because I think with all their products, they do have some footprints in enterprise IT. But almost every product line is down. I don't know if you saw the results. There was actually a very interesting Twitter feed yesterday during, I think, their earnings call of such. But, millions fewer iPhones and stuff like that. But to be fair, they still have an incredible market share. But I'd almost think they've got the addressable market of smartphone persons on the world covered, right? So, and also I'll go one step further. Apple uses outstanding hardware, so they almost do themselves a disservice by making such a good piece of equipment. I have a piece that I don't like. It's not an iPhone, but I wish I stayed with Motorola, let's just say that, with Droid devices. But I'm just throwing some numbers out here from L. Reg, down 13% to only $50.6 billion. And I think that's on a quarter. Or I can't tell if that's on a quarter or a year. It must be on a year. But back in the first quarter of 2015, for example, they had record revenue from the iPhone, which was 66% of Apple's money. They still have like $233 billion in cash. So that's crazy. They're citing some demand in China as a slump of recently, but also it closed 2015 on a high, but then led to a slump right now. A lot of different things going on, but there are a lot of small dips with iPhones. So with Apple, any kind of right off the cuff comments like that?
Well, you know, I'm a PC and a Droid, so but no, I don't have any crazy comments here. I know when they had their release, I think the major announcement was the new wristband to the watch. So it's not the Apple it's been in past years where they've had these awesome new announcements with just something brilliant, new, you know, whatever. I have heard that the Macs are actually up more than PCs. Granted, it's still a much smaller market share. But you know, it's Apple. They're still doing pretty well, right?
Yeah.
You know, I can't begrudge them that, and I can't say that, you know, Q2, they're down a little bit. I think a lot of people are down this year, especially in general. So, you know, I'm not panicking yet.
Well, the weird thing is,
the Reg says,
I'm, you know, I'm very much a PC Android type as well, but I do appreciate the market share, the number of devices, the innovation that the iPhone, I think when it first came out in 2008, etc. Outstanding hardware. I mean, I honestly don't even use my iPad anymore, but there are some people that is absolutely the right platform for. But
yeah.
You know, there's, it's like that 50 some billion dollar number was a quarter number, and then the annual revenue is well up over 200 billion a year. Ooh, that's crazy to think about. Not bad. But you know, percentage swings at that altitude are pretty significant, so I just wanted to highlight that. I think it's interesting, but I would not get worried either.
Right.
The last piece of quick hit news I'd like to hit is about Microsoft providing certain large spenders of Azure with enterprise agreements free support. Interesting move. Is it Oracle that pioneered that space? Oh, no, they didn't. They did not pioneer free support. Interesting, though. So enterprise agreements, by the way, in the Microsoft space are changing. They, I think, lowered the floor on that, so smaller companies have to kind of go up to an EA now. That might not be done yet, or it's coming, something like that. But for those who really go into Azure, you know, especially if you're doing more than just running SharePoint online or running VMs, if you're legitimately doing applications and new types of models, you might need help. So this notion of free help with the large environments, I think this is very significant and very much an enabler for the broader Azure message. So, you know, right off the top, what do you think of that?
Well, what's the support mean? You know, is it I'm having trouble with something, it's not working, and I need you to help me fix it, or maybe you need to fix it on your end? Or is it, you know, enterprise support will help you design the correct maybe model or build in redundancy, help you with that? Well, you know, what is the support that they're offering?
Well, according to the Register, it's they get six, count them, six app consulting services sessions where they have customized one-on-one consultation with a technical expert related to Azure stuff, architecting, design, implementation. So someone who's done it before, and I was just at a dinner last night talking to someone who's 100% Azure all in, and he said he absolutely couldn't have done it without the help from Microsoft and selected partners.
I think that's really interesting then, because you know, especially dealing with what I deal with every day, SDN, designing an application, no matter where you're designing it, whether that's, you know, on premises or in the cloud or some hybrid, you know, model, the design of the application is the most difficult thing, especially for infrastructure people, right? Who might be the ones moving to the cloud or trying to design this. So I absolutely think that that's a really smart thing for Microsoft to do, although it could get them into some hot water too, because there could be some really long support calls generated over this. But, you know, I'm sure they're making it up in this freemium support model.
It's going to have to be a calculated risk. One out of 38 of these implementations are going to be really bad, okay, or something like that, and very archaic. I know that there are entrenched IT shops that haven't modernized anything, right? Imagine, like, you know, state governments or, you know, old governmental systems or, you know, maybe some nonprofits who haven't had IT money. You know, they could really be dealing with some archaic IT. I know that NT is still in use out there. I know that Windows 2000 is, and they're like, much less bad applications. And I had long said that virtualization is almost, in a way, a bad thing, because you automatically get this, like, museum to run stuff forever, right? So the pressure to get off of NT was reduced. And the same for 2000 and the same for 2003, because you really have no incentive to remove it when you can run it forever. So I know that a lot of people kind of went that way and they kind of time paused things. So, but I do think this is a very interesting move. As far as I know, I don't know of any other hyperpublic cloud being this involved with that migration and implementation and the like. So I think that I personally think this is going to be very smart in the long run.
I do think Rackspace does some of this model. I'm sure for the right amount of money, anyone will do it. But
yeah, that's true.
But I know Rackspace does a little bit of this, but I don't think it's free. I think it's a service you probably pay for. Because it is. I think it can get very difficult. And, you know, one of the questions we ask our customers right away is, you know, we go in and we say, do you know every one of your applications that you have running, and do you know all of the dependencies? And pretty much 0% of people know the answers to that, unless they are just a really small shop, right? Or a startup or greenfield somehow. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's an interesting model that Microsoft is doing this. And again, I'm sure if it's an enterprise deal, you know, certain customers, I'm sure that they are making up for it monetarily somehow.
Oh yeah, this is, you know, free just means that the money's been moved around, right? And, you know, just to clarify again, according to the LRegg article, that, you know, there is standard support with Azure, right? But it has, quote, limited business critical dependence and 2-hour response time, et cetera, those types of things. But this is more the design and consulting. So if I were to loosely equate it to traditional IT, this is basically a pre-implementation professional service, right? And that's kind of like what you said. You can find those services available. But when they're drawing the line very close to the EA process, very close to the Azure migration, you know, and Microsoft has an incredible advantage. They, you know, have their feet in the operating systems, their feet in the applications, their feet in the cloud, right? They can really draw these lines very broadly. So I'm watching this. I think it's a great move, and I think it'll come out really well.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, that concludes the quick hits that I've got. But any other comments at this time, Lauren?
No, gotten some great feedback about ITWT from some folks around at the OpenStack Summit, so I'm excited about that. So, you know, if you guys like us, you know, give us a good ranking and tell us your feedback and all that good stuff.